Last time, we saw that the effects of the Depression were diminished in Grand Rapids as Blandin kept the paper mill operating at capacity and with full employment at full wages. But there's much more to the story. Charles Blandin chose the early 1930s to initiate a major program of expansion for his Grand Rapids paper mill. In 1946, he reminisced, "Our small machines had to compete with many large, new, high-speed Canadian machines, and if it came to a time when these operated at a loss, conditions might be disastrous for the small mills with small and slow-speed machines. To survive, it seemed to me that we would have to modernize and increase the output as nearly as possible into line with the lowest-cost producers in the industry." Well, certainly that theory was sound, but what timing? Many of the nation's newsprint mills had modernized and expanded during the 1920s when paper prices were still reasonable and demand was high. But by the early 1930s, those mills were paying dearly the piper who had so blissfully led them to overly optimistic expansion. Overproduction and ruthless competition crippled the newsprint industry, and the price for paper was low and falling. Most newsprint mills had expensive equipment standing idle and workers employed only part-time. Many had also passed into receivership. Creditors had foreclosed, and legally appointed boards of receivers comprised of moneylenders, bankers, and their designees were operating the plants. Any income went for taxes and wages and debts. The owners had lost control over their property and their investment. So Blandin chose to undertake exactly the kind of expansion that had led to unmitigated disaster for so many mills. But Blandin was fully conversant with prevailing conditions in the paper trade. He was, after all, a keen businessman who had proved his ability as business manager for the St. Paul newspapers. And he had very deliberately decided on his new and bold course of action. His proposed expansion could take advantage of the low cost of building materials. Labor, both skilled and unskilled, was plentiful and cheap. Another positive factor was the guarantee in the contract with the St. Paul newspapers for the long-term purchase of newsprint. Supplying the Dispatch Pioneer Press was even more important in the early 1930s than when Blandin had negotiated the terms in 1927. He also counted on the Blandin Paper Company's reputation for quality newsprint that satisfied customers and had kept the mill supplied with additional orders as well. And finally, because he had access to money from the sale of the St. Paul newspapers, remember that he gained $5 million from that sale, so he did not require large-scale expensive financing to carry out his plans. But nonetheless, Blandin was taking a risk when he plunged ahead with his expansion program. The citizens of Grand Rapids regarded with wonder and admiration the scope of the far-reaching plans. A flurry of activity created many new jobs in the community in the midst of the worst of times. The importance of the paper mill to the little Minnesota town was clearer than ever before. A banner headline in a November 1930 issue of the Herald Review announced the plans for expansion. A new paper machine, according to Blandin, the most modern, the most efficient, the best that the papermaking industry has yet seen, was to be installed. To house the number 3 machine, a major addition to the plant was to be built. Blandin stated, "It is the desire of the company to proceed with construction at the present time to help the present industrial situation." The Herald Review applauded the important construction activity that the project would engender and gleefully noted the many new job opportunities about to be created. Work on the addition to the mill, with employment priority given to Grand Rapids men with families to support, was soon underway. When the Commercial Club learned that the project would require large quantities of crushed rock, a delegation met with the Blandin Company management to suggest obtaining it locally. Willing and even anxious to cooperate, The company decided to purchase the rock from the farmers who had amassed great heaps of stones while clearing fields. Trucks and wagons loaded with boulders and stones lined up to deposit their cargo near the rock crusher adjacent to the construction site. The company paid $1 per ton, a price the Herald Review considered exceptionally good. Some farmers made 3 trips a day with loads that averaged 3 tons. In addition to all the wages paid to local men, the firm paid area farmers more than $10,000. The Herald Review reiterated that as a result of all the activity at the mill, there is very little, if any, economic distress in this village. The editorial mentioned that at a time when most paper mills are closing down or working with limited production, the Blandin Mill is being enlarged. By the early summer of 1931, the mill addition was complete. Was widely touted in the Minnesota press and in national paper trade publications. The addition's most striking feature was its total absence of windows. The Paper Mill magazine stated that it is probably the only windowless paper mill in the world, and all lighting and ventilation are under scientific control. As explained in the journal The Paper Industry, C.K. Blandin saw an opportunity to construct a plant following scientific principles, which would keep the manufacturing of their product under perfect conditions at all times, and thus meet the exacting requirements for pressroom operation. Careful engineering resulted in a ventilation system relying on fans and ducts to distribute fresh air and control humidity throughout the building. The new addition to the mill was attractive as well as substantial. Once construction was complete, landscapers cleaned the grounds, planted shrubbery and flower beds, and laid sod. The Herald Review editorialized that the mill might be most modern, but in Grand Rapids, special delight was taken in the appearance of the property. The landscaping, the paper stated, indicates on the part of Mr. Blandin and his associates an interest in more than large rolls of rapidly made paper, and we take pride in that. Well, all of the plans for expansion centered on the new paper machine. The mill in Grand Rapids again turned to the Beloit Ironworks for a custom-designed forged veneer. And we have to take note of this order for the number 3 machine in Grand Rapids. It's astonishing to find that in 1931, in all of North America, Mexico, United States, Canada, in all of North America, there was only one order, just one order for a papermaking machine, just one. It illustrates very well the depths of the problems that paper manufacturers were facing in the United States. And needless to say, the Beloit Ironworks was delighted to be the one to get that order. They had manufactured some 600 forged veneer machines by that point, so they're well experienced and they wanted to do their very best with this new order. The 20 pages of specifications prepared for the Blandin Paper Company promised the very latest design for high speed operation and construction to be the very best. A price of almost $400,000 was set. Soon after the machine was in operation, a Herald Review reporter arrived to inspect it. Bewildered by its many improved and unique features, he found any full description of the forged veneer too technical for anyone but an expert to understand. The paper trade journals, however, relished every aspect of the latest Beloit machine, and several articles explained its operation in detail. The Beloit company appeared to have made good its promise. The paper trade journal referred to the new forged veneer as the latest and most modern type, with many improvements not heretofore used on newsprint machines. The paper industry described it as embodying all of the latest improvements in paper machine design. And indeed, this number 3 machine was an impressive combination of advanced industrial design coupled with Beloit engineering skill and careful production. The Beloit Ironworks particularly emphasized the driving train that powered the forged veneer as the best type drive designed up to this time. Two full pages of specifications describe the elaborate series of clutches and couplings that allowed adjustments and ensured the integration of all parts of the machine. Sophisticated control, some of them push buttons, on the front of the Ford Rainier permitted the operator to vary the speed of the machine as needed. In 1981, Elvis Sieber, longtime employee of the paper company, recalled that not long after the number 3 machine began operation, Charles Blandon wandered into the new machine room to observe the complicated and elaborate equipment. After a while, thinking of the cost of the Ford Rainier and all the construction, Blandon turned to Sieber and asked, "Well, what would you do with $1 million? Sieber promptly replied, "I'll tell you, Mr. Blandon, I'd put it in my pocket and head for Florida." Blandon laughed and turned back to gaze at the Ford Rainier. So in the midst of the Great Depression, Blandon had chosen not to head for Florida, but to invest $1,200,000 in modernizing and increasing the production capacity of his paper mill. During his association with Grand Rapids, Charles Blandon had made many contributions to the welfare of the town, and he had many more in the offing. But the role he played in offsetting the devastating effects of the Depression in Grand Rapids is certainly one of the most important of his accomplishments during his many years as the town's leading businessman.